Welcome, citizens. You're listening to New Amsterdam Radio, the podcast for creatives. Here, thinkers and doers always have a key to the city. The mayor is in, so office hours start now.
New Amsterdam Radio starts now. What's going on, everybody? Can you believe it? Season 10 is about to be winding down here, episode 248. I think 251 would be season 11 of New Amsterdam Radio. Didn't think I'd make it this far, but here we are. NewAmsterdam.com. Learn more about the show. That's KAWAmsterdam.com. And you can probably search for the show on all those favorite podcasting services. My guest this week is Hunt Henry, who's hailing all the way from England, who is into mergers and acquisitions. But more importantly, he's the guy who is an advocate for entrepreneurs and small business owners doing their due diligence in the process of a merger or acquisition. So it's kind of cool to sit with them, chat with them. Hutton and I have been trying to get together for an episode for about 2 or 3 months. And this happens not often, but ever so often you'll get a guest where it's like a moving target. So, but it worked out and I'm glad we got to connect. And it's going to be fun. It's kind of a housekeeping thing before we get to today's episode, though. SeatGeek is this sponsor. Make sure you check out SeatGeek to get yourself access to some of the best tickets in town. Use promo code FLOBITO, that's FLOBITO, for $20 off your first order. SeatGeek, FLOBITO, match made in heaven. As changes are happening on my podcasting service, I'm not the only one on this one, but I use Spotify for podcasters just to put things up. Since the service is pretty much freemium as it is, or if not outright free, they have right to change the game. They pretty much are changing the way we upload shows and being fully transparent with you. Not a bad thing, not complaining, but it just doesn't make sense to have intros quite like these, which is kind of disappointing because I liked to be able to reach out and tell people to check out the show and just intro some of our guests and go into the interview. But I think just for the sake of brevity and it's like that, we're changing how we're consuming podcasts more often. I think YouTube really changed the way of just uploading a show like a show. Here you go. Today's episode, we're talking about X, Y, and Z, as opposed to having an intro and the call outs and social media things and all that jazz. We just relying on the visuals. So I think as we roll into June in season 11, we might just do straight video uploads of the episodes, probably some more visual dynamic content. And if you're listening on the audio version, then hey, you don't lose a whole lot, but you won't be able to hear my sultry tones as we get to introduce these episodes. But it just makes it easier for everybody, and I think that's the way it's going to be. I was debating even mentioning it, but I think it's best for everyone to know where we're going to be with that. So I'm going to miss that dope intro song. In fact, sometimes I hum the theme song to myself before I hit the record button to get myself in the mood as the mayor. So end of an era, but we're still going to have episodes all over the city for creatives. Enough of my gibber jabbering. Now it's time for my chat with M&A guru, Hutton Henry. Welcome back to New Amsterdam Radio, the podcast for creatives. It is I, the mayor, Flobo Boys, in the mayor's office, hanging with people who are doing the dang thing. And my guest today is doing so many things. We're trying to connect for months, but still we call a celebrity guest, if you will. Someone who knows the intersection between technology and the human touch. Give it up for Hutton Henry. How's it going, sir?
I'm really good. Thanks, Flobo. How are you?
Wait. I'm good. I'm good. Yeah. See, I don't pay my guests. That's, the intro is all you get. That's
yeah.
That's my gift to you.
I made my week. Don't worry.
I appreciate you. So look, as we record this, it's May, which is crazy because it was 2019 last week. How's 2024 treating you professionally and personally?
Oh, that's a really good question. So genuinely, it's really good professionally. It's the busiest I've ever seen. And this is my third business, 15 years as a founder. So, and it's genuinely really busy this year. If you ask me this time last year, it was terrible. So I like to be honest. And if it's busy, it genuinely is busy. Personally, I'm very happy because some of my creative things are still going on the side and I've managed to make time for those. So happy man at the moment.
So. Well, that's going to be my fourth question, now my second question, because as someone who loves to have or was looking forward to happy times, like you said, you're a founder of 3X. I mean, three different companies. Walk me through that. And what's that like being out there in the open seas when you have good years and bad years when it comes to the bottom line?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good analogy, I think, with the ship and the seas. And I think the main thing is, you know, as a high level thing, making sure that boat is there to weather the storms either way. And I think the number one thing you learn, and I'll take you through that journey very quickly, is to be quite sort of buoyant, I guess, using the same sort of analogy. But don't go too, when the highs are high, don't go high. And when it's too low, don't go low. You kind of keep this middle ground. Mm-hmm. And literally the first business I set up was a bit of an experiment. I was actually living as an artist in Berlin with my wife, and I set up this tech company, and it just seemed to go, and we had a great time. And I think really for early start entrepreneurs, I learned one of the hardest lessons is around marketing. You know, you can do a really good job and you can get a really good, you know, you can provide a really great service for your customer, but I just didn't have the marketing skills to make the most of what we had. And sure. I learned so many things in that first business. And I loved it, you know, it was really good. But we stopped, because unfortunately it's a bereavement in my family and some various other things. And then moved to another version and literally grew another business and enjoyed that. But I think my soul has always been in a creative sort of way, and this business brings through so many different interests that I have with yeah. technology, writing, and people, and genuinely that's why I love what I do today. But it took me a very long time to find what really resonated for me, and if it resonates with you and it's valuable to your customer, that's a good combination.
Yeah. So when you're at a party, and of course, you know me, I hate parties. He's like, I don't know. I just met you today. No, if you knew me, you know I hate parties. And then someone goes, what do you do? There is a sense of dread because founders do a lot. You do like 30 things. Yeah. Like, how do you succinctly say, if at all, what do you do when it comes to like everything under your many hats?
Yeah. So can I tell you the truth? What I genuinely say for the last 10 years or so.
Well, don't lie to me, hon.
Well, no, because what I mean is that I have forever, if people ask me that question, I'll always say, I'm a food photographer. And they're like, what? Oh. And like, I completely take them off track. And I know that's really naughty of me, but, and you know, when you go into those shops and they have the photos of burgers and kebabs, I said, that's my job. And, oh, wow. Because they're waiting for a really boring answer, aren't they, really? Right? And it's yeah. going to be, oh, I made this platform to do this. So I kind of do that just to kind of lighten the mood. And then right now, I basically say, I assess companies for investors. And they say, mm-hmm. what does that mean? It's a bit like a house surveyor. Like, you know, you're going to buy a new house and you want to know that that house is good. So yeah. that's simplistic view of how I say it. And I know it's really cheeky of me to say this sort of the photographer thing. It's something I started years ago because yeah. people size you up with that question, don't they?
Absolutely.
So I like to sort of knock that question out and then let's you know, bring it into a bit of a fun conversation, really. So
Yeah, it's interesting because like I did so much and a lot of things were considered cool on the surface. But here in Los Angeles, because we have so many creatives, it almost becomes a competition of how many different or disparate things you can do at once. Like there's a bigger problem with American culture of being like, I'm hustling, I'm grinding, but no one's making any progress. So mm-hmm. I go to parties, I would say, oh, what do you do? I'm like, absolutely nothing. Probably living under a bridge. Yeah. And they go, what do you mean? And I go, you know. Yeah. So I totally get
that. The next thing on that is like, and they go, what do you mean? Are independently wealthy?
So, man of leisure, yeah.
Yeah.
just hanging out. You said before about a lot of creative struggle with the marketing aspect. And I'd be the first one to say that, even though I think I have a leg up on my peers, it's always something where it's like, hey, how do I find the clients, the money, the notoriety, whatever the goal is. Everyone's tried. There's so many things we make mistakes. So that first year, we buy the most fanciest toys. We get the most slickest consultants around the neighborhood. We do all the TikTok trends, and then it goes, what's the use? But there has to be not necessarily an easier solution, but a more simplistic approach when it comes to finding your own marketing lane, right?
Yeah, definitely. So I think, you know, if you take those three companies, what you learn is the entire world is full of all of this marketing information that's based on B2C, B2B, D2C, all these different things. And you're like, oh my God, I need to be doing all of these things at once. You know, I've got to make my funnel. I've got to get content out there. I've got to do all these things. And then you realize, and I was very lucky in a number of years ago that I just met this chap weirdly on a podcast, and he said, look, I'd like to work with you. And he literally slimmed down the marketing to a couple of items, and we just did it consistently on that sort of two bits of content to too many people, and it worked like an absolute dream. So try and simplify it to what's your message, and you know, what are the one or two things you can get to someone's desk or on their phone or whatever, and then just consistently do that rather than 20 different things at once. And I do find that it works, but it's pretty scary, because as a founder, you can start every single tool, you know, your email and your CRM and all these things, and you feel like you have to knit them all together. And I think what you end up doing, definitely in your first business, is you do what I call is startup work. There's startup work and startup meetings, and it's this stuff that takes forever to do. And it's really interesting, exciting, but it never gets you out of the house. And getting out of the house gets you work, right? And then startup meetings is where you meet lots of people with all these similar ideas, and you come out at the other end, you're like, nothing's going to happen with that meeting. You know, we've had a great time, really interesting, but we're all in the same boat. And so it sounds a little bit negative, but it's a good thing to learn, how do you prioritize, you know, productive effort, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I am the worst at that, because it's kind of like, I'll just get up and I'll do some emails and I feel productive. I posted on social, I didn't leave the theoretical house. I could do that in a hotel or whatever, but I didn't really go out there and press flesh in that way. But you had mentioned that you're kind of in the realm of helping companies do their due diligence, or helping entrepreneurs do their diligence. How has that evolved over time? Because I feel like when I was a kid, it was kind of like, oh, the building's great and the accountant book is okay. But now I think there's a lot more to that, is it not?
Yeah, definitely. So there's if you're assessing your business, I mean, we help the founders, but we also look at the investors' side as well. And what you'll see is there's so many people like us looking at different aspects of a company. We look at the tech and the spend and what people are creating. And some people might be looking at the HR or what's your social response. But there's so many specialists who look at different aspects of a company. But right at the early stages, let's be honest, it's really about the founders or the people who are making it, because that's what we're investing in. We're investing in your vision, your ability to sell, and your ability to make something. If that all sort of comes together, that really is built on a gut feel and trust. But if we told everyone that, that would sound like, great, I'm just going to go and pitch me. I'm going to show you, you know, there has to be some form of data and traction as well.
Yeah. Well, has your foundings ever caused conflict where it's kind of like, no, you shouldn't invest in this? Like, what do you mean? We want to get out as soon as we can. I want to go on the beach in Maui. What's up?
Yeah. I think really, if you look, I say that I sit on this front row seat. You're in LA. You'll understand, like, it's like a cinema thing for us. We sit on this front seat and we watch all these dream makers, and that's investors and founders and all these people who come up with a vision or dream. I get to watch it and go, well, this is my opinion, and I think what's happening. And you will get conflict. And sometimes you get people who just don't know if they're going to make it. They've got a great idea, but they're going to need some help.
Yeah. So. And that's where you slot in. Talk to me about the book, People First, and what that means. What was the impetus behind creating that just for others?
No, thank you. So my background is really around merging companies. So I used to work for a large company like Ford when they bought Jaguar, HP when they bought Compaq, really big deals, right? But when you're doing these buyouts, you're actually really mixing people. So the intention of the book was to say, look, I understand we're looking at the money and the product and how great this business is going to be. But why don't we switch it the other way around and look at the people first and how are we going to merge these people together? And so that's the impetus of it was, yeah. You know, we're looking too much at the tech and at the money. We need to look at people and what's going to happen when things, when you get investment, everything changes, you know, because you've got new people coming in. And so if you're very early stage and you're building your thing that, you know, often it's very exciting to be offered some investment. But what most founders and small companies aren't aware is things are going to change soon. As soon as you get that money, the pace is going to go up. You're going to need to report more. And all of these aspects I find are quite a struggle for people. And that's my focus. It's like, how can I help that person? And I do it quite often, Flobo, like, you know, I help them with the deal. But as soon as the deal has happened, let's do some coaching to help you understand how you're going to speak to your investor now that they effectively own part of your company and therefore part of your livelihood.
So, right. Now, I can't believe I was in corporate America for any period of time. But I haven't been really in that space since 2017. I had a little bit of a reprieve in 18, but it was interesting because I was working for a test and measurement rental company. It was called ElectroRent, and it was bought by a company called MicroLease, but they kept the ElectroRent name. I know, I'm boring myself just saying it. But I will say, everyone had all the charts and graphs about projections and what they wanted to do. But I was in the marketing department for ElectroRent, and they had a content-based marketing strategy. Now, it isn't the golden unicorn it was now, but back in 2016, it was like, oh, the next wave. And I imagine having people coming with their numbers, because they were the buying company, and saying, hey, we're going back to empowering our sales team with like sales sheets and coupons. And I was like, what? This is a whole difference of philosophy that wasn't necessarily tangible. Our marketing budget had this and we made this, but it really wasn't an approach. And I think that caused a lot of brain drain. So you're absolutely right. Everyone wants to do all the research in the world when it comes to money, but people, they'll fall in line. And when they don't, it's a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple of things in here. I sort of moved it on. So I started doing psychoanalysis of the teams. And what I'm looking for specifically is diversity of thought. So if you look at a team of 10 people, you know, I want to see how different that team is. And, it's not just the founder, it's everyone around them. And then we can work out the best way things are going to work for them. And it sounds very technical. So I wrote, I put together a graphic novel, which is free. And it sort of explains the whole process. Because to me, we talk a lot about diversity at the moment. We have done. It's a natural thing to work with people who are different to us. But actually, I think true diversity takes a lot of effort to manage well. Because if you've got, you know, I see it all the time, and you need people who are just, you're just going to keep them motivated, you know, and engaged and emotionally engaged. And it takes a lot of work. So if we can understand how people's brains work, we can design our teams better. And me, it sounds a bit, this will sound soft, but if I can make a happier team, that to me is our job is done. So.
What? It allow me to push back quite a bit there, because I'm with you. Happy workers are great. Happy cows make better taste in milk. But it's kind of approaching self-parody, especially if you follow the corporate memes out there of how do you make a team happy. Now, I know the idea is that a job is to be a job, but you also don't want to be dragged for being a team that has pizza parties in a break room, right? So like, what are some things that a company could do now, small or large, to make people feel as if they care, as opposed to being like, hey guys, we have a game night after work today?
Yeah. I mean, obviously the number one problem right now is communication. It's so hard with everyone, you know, a lot of people working from home. So seeing people face to face is a really big thing. That's a really simple thing. And it's surprising how few people are doing that now. I don't know if you're seeing the same. So
yeah.
So that's the obvious one. I think really, I mean, you're talking to me, I'm always going to talk about self-awareness, right? Sure. That's the number one, you know, because you, especially as we're all separated, you're in LA, I'm in London, we come off this call and we're still thinking things and we haven't got the time to come back and say how I was thinking this and that. So increasing our self-awareness, especially if you're setting up a small company, is really important, because if you can do that, you can understand, okay, I'm going to ask you to do this, but you're going to get this, you're going to see it in a different way to me, you know? Right. And so not only do we need to communicate, we need to be able to understand how to communicate in a way that engage people. If you're a leader, it's important. It sounds like really basic things, but I find it's really important. And I always see it after a deal. Yeah, I've got to get a really sharp presentation. I've just got to tell you what we're doing. I've got to get you on this vision and this journey. And the only way I can do it is if I get to see you in person, fantastic. If I can't, I've got to work out creative ways to meet you, right? So I think there's a lot of creativity in it. So it's probably the simplest thing to do.
Absolutely. I mean, big companies have their own playbook, and I'm obviously you have that experience too, but I feel like with a lot of the guests I've had in the show, those that have teams, which is always a scary thought when you're an entrepreneur, you start on your own, you get your first employee one, employee two, employee four. The lament I get, which is kind of funny because I get to be a fly on the wall. The lament I get is, oh man, my team just don't want it like me. They don't got the same heart I do. They don't work as hard as me. And I go, oh yeah, it's not your original idea. And how do you keep them along, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know if you know that, I mean, definitely for small companies, I recommend that EOS system. It's an American system, if you know it. It's open source and it is something that teaches you how to set your company up. It's a great thing to set up. I'm not selling anything here, genuinely, and it helps you sort of design your company. And the thing it really teaches you is to create your values and your mission and your purpose and start bringing your people along from that perspective. And it's quite a simple process, but you have to be consistent, and you have to have really good meetings. So I in that system, they have like the weekly meeting is called like a level 10. And what you do at the end of the whole meeting is everyone has to score it. And if it's under an 8, you're saying there was a problem with that. And then it's your job as the boss and the early stage founder to say, well, what was the issue with the meeting? Because most people leave meetings, they're bored and they haven't told you they're bored. They can't wait to get out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. I mean, I won't say there's never been a time where I enjoyed a meeting, but there are plenty of times where I felt the meeting could be cut in half. We got things to do, like make you money. But I think it's always a fun journey to watch, or actually not watch, but to observe other founders and guests on the show, talk about how they have their growing pains, because everyone kind of grows differently. There isn't so much a playbook for things that didn't exist 15, 20 years ago. Like being a YouTube advertising outfit wasn't a career that time
ago. One thing I would say, I mean, those things have changed. What hasn't changed is the need for difficult conversations. You know, like, yeah, something's not working. And I think, you know, I don't know if your other guests have this, but when you're growing that small team, it feels more like a family at the first year or two. But at some stage, you have to step into the boss seat again. And, you know, and it's like, this is not working for me. This needs to happen. And it's very hard to jump from one to the other, you know. Yeah. And you see that as the companies grow as well, is that the boss has to keep changing and adapting. And the best people, I think, that have literally shown this as a really good example is the Airbnb founders. You know, they, if you watch them, they went from early stage creatives and startup people, and they've gone all the way, and they're still in the seat as a corporate.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a very interesting tale about the evolution of Airbnb. I'm glad it's a case study that you had top of mind because it did felt like a different shift there. Good or bad, it's up to debate, but I definitely feel like it was a different approach.
Yeah, I mean, and also the product changes, doesn't it, over time? Because at first it's all within each other's houses, and now it's become quite corporate in its way. And so, yeah.
So I didn't even know this because I was always a hotel guy. I know it's cool to be, that was very cool to say I'm a hotel person now. Yeah, but yeah. I was always a hotel guy just because I didn't know who to complain with. And I remember the first time I actually booked an Airbnb. It's 2022, so not that long ago, 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Post-pandemic, because yeah. I was always afraid. I was like, well, I don't know. What happens if there's a stain? Is it my stain? I was kind of blown away by not necessarily the platform, because the platform pretty much tells you what your responsibilities are, but how advanced the host had become. The guy showed up like it was one of his many properties, tossed us the keys, yeah. gave us the chores yeah. list, and left. Yeah. Whereas I guess I remember the original marketing where it's like, oh, come yeah. on this couch, man. You're one of us. Yeah. You're family, yeah. bro.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my first time was in Toronto, and I had a hotel booked, and the night before I went, they canceled it. And yeah. then my wife found this, like, she said, there's this new site. This was in 2012. And so we tried it and we just took the risk and ended up in this beautiful townhouse with like young people going up partying with them every night, as well as doing the work during the day. And yeah. it was such a great experience because you became part of the community. Right. So, you know,
yeah, I miss the good old days.
yeah, definitely.
I understand that everything shifts, but what doesn't shift is our department questions. Here in New Amsterdam Radio, we ask our guests kind of some standard questions, almost like a lightning round, if you will. You yeah. know how to play with me, sir?
Sure.
All right. You're a 3X founder, but I have to ask, do you believe in days off? And if so, what do you do on those days off?
I definitely do days off. So I have the obvious things with my family and daughter and being present. So that's really important. And she's street dancing and all the crazy stuff. And that's great to be around. So, and then on my own time, so I was really into electronic music and DJing as a kid. So wow. that's always been my thing. You know, I used to not go to school and sit at home. You know, the friends would like sit there with the equivalent of decks and things when we were much younger. So, mm-hmm. So I occasionally go to the studio because that is the best place. Put the music on really loud and just go for it and completely forget. I love that. So, yeah. And I did do 9 years screenwriting. So like writing film, I really enjoy it and I love the creativity. The only problem now is I already spend so much time in front of the computer. So sure. having a hobby that increases that is I find it very difficult because I love it, but I don't want to increase time on front of the screen.
That is fascinating for a bunch of reasons. Cause I was going to ask you what genre is electronic music, but I also went to film school. That's why I live in Los Angeles. Cause I'm from New York.
Yeah.
I went to film yeah. school as an editor.
Okay.
But I started writing because I know you have this thing about silos, right? But my film school had silos in that if you were an editing student, you just took editing classes. But I wanted to write. Papa wanted to sing. And so I started screenwriting for about 10 years to get myself acclimated okay. to that side of the yeah. process. If I can fix something on the script stage, I wouldn't have to fix it in post, right?
Yeah.
So you're right. What really was the drawback was that you're either way, you're in a dark room and just, you know, click back and away. But I since evolved into being in front of the camera doing this stuff. But it's kind of yeah. funny that parallel there.
yeah, yeah. I mean, like, I had to train myself to be on my own. I found that so hard. You know, the yeah. first years of sitting there, you know, everyone else is at work and you've got this time off and you're writing. And I just wanted to see people. I found that very hard, but I trained myself to do that. What sort of genre were you writing in screenwriting?
Oh, okay. So I'm glad you asked this because I'm from Brooklyn. And that's very important. I started yeah. writing genres I hated because I wanted to learn the nuances. So I have a Western that is a neo-Western, so it takes place in modern times. I have a romantic sports comedy. I have an Indiana Jones type National Treasure type treasure hunt screenplay. Like the idea was really to learn different kinds of, like, almost like when you go to art school, like how you learn different styles and expressions. But I would say yeah. now, if given the chance, I love thriller mysteries. Those are my favorite genres.
Yeah, Yeah, that's good.
What was your DJ name, can I ask?
Scribey.
Yes, let's go. Ministry of Sound presents. I love it.
I like to keep it really low key. So yeah. It's like the opposite of my work. So, you know, it's my escapism. But I really don't sort of do too much on either side. Neither side crosses really. So.
Sure. I understand. Everyone collects something. What do you collect?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. What do I collect? I would go, I mean, the music collection is too easy because that's just a hobby. So I'm going to say I'm too scatty to collect something.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Throw it back, you know, like something.
It's really naughty, but even at school, as soon as I finished my work, I put it in the bin and carry on the next day. It's sort of like this very forward motion with me, and I don't collect much. So that's a fascinating question.
Oh yeah, we're creatures of habit. Just for full disclosure, I have enamel pins, so I do the little enamel pins. But I have this thing about going to all the I'm a big baseball guy. All the big Major League Baseball parks. There's 30 professional teams. So when I go to a new stadium, I'll get a pin or something. January, I went to see my cousins in England, but I went to go see my team, Manchester City, play at the Etihad. So I got a little. Got little pins there too as well, because I'm just I'm just a nerd like that. What is left on your travel bucket list? Where do you want to go visit? What do you want to go see? What do you want to eat?
I was very lucky to do a lot of travel, so that was great. I would say what is left is definitely Japan. I don't know if you've been
once.
Yeah, how was it?
It changed your life. No one has ever gone to Japan and said, "Nah, it's not worth it." It's a core memory. Like it will never. Yeah. Nothing like it, really.
Yeah. So I have that. I've spent a lot of time in Australia and New Zealand, and as a travel living experience, I would love to do a couple of years in New Zealand. It's just covered in water. I love that place. I don't know but Japan is definitely on that list.
I've been to Australia, not New Zealand. So that was what's left on my bucket list, I would say, would be Chile and Portugal. I'm sure you've been to Portugal, it's right down the street.
Yeah.
Right down the road.
Yeah.
On that England trip last January, this is kind of a full circle moment. So my family's from the West Indies.
Okay.
And my mom, when she left, her first stop was in Scotland. That was really her coming of age place. Wow. She decided what world was before coming to the United States. And so I had a chance to visit a town she lived in, Stirling. And so Stirling, to me, was like an amazing memory of seeing it. And I think Glasgow's one of my favorite cities of all time. But Stirling was really kind of like wow, my mom had her bell bottoms and afro right here on this block. So pretty cool.
Amazing. Whereabouts in the Caribbean?
Barbados. So both of my parents are from Barbados. My dad came straight here in the 70s. Mom went to Scotland. It was going to go to Canada. She was going to go to Vancouver. Right. And then kind of stopped and I met my dad. Became my dad.
Wow. Yeah. My family are from the Caribbean as well. They're from St. Lucia.
Oh, wow. Right down the street. Yeah. So that 11-hour flight is very, very common. Yeah. I should have known that because you have an English name. Like how Boyce is a Scottish name. I should have been like, yeah, you got to be from West Indies. Oh, and lastly, because I ask everyone here, this is the most difficult question. So I totally understand. But what is your favorite junk food, sir?
Oh, that junk food. I would say, I think, because it's really funny how your brain goes for all the good things and like you want to impress people, but actually this is like the secret desire, right? It's like the secret things you eat. I think I have a very old story about pancakes. And
okay.
But it's a particular thing and it's a mix. And it's to do with the fact that when I was a teenager, and this is okay, this story, but I went to, as part of our family, we were looking after a young girl, and and this like mum turned up, and I was a teenage boy, and she said, come in. And she was a model, but hardly sort of dressed in a way, but not in any bad way. And right. And she made me pancakes in this weird thing. And I was like, so I've always had this association with these unhealthy food, because it's, I tell my wife about it, it's like, oh, you're not having those pancakes again, you know, because it brings back too many positive memories.
Right. I've had that before. I like for not the pancakes, obviously, but the first time I had beef Wellington, it was such a like a fantastic culinary experience. I didn't want to touch it. I didn't want to ruin it. You know what I mean? Shout out to Gordon Ramsay. I want to go to Ramsay restaurants in Vegas. He has like four of them.
And, wow.
So because for some reason, like I think Gordon Ramsay is a fantastic Scotsman, but I feel like he's like the gold standard celebrity chef as far as like quality versus mass production. So I went there and be like, whatever, it's not as good as our American food. And I was like, oh my God, this is actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I think
it's one of the good things. He's got quite a good analogy in how I think we should run our small businesses. Because, you know, every time he comes in and he looks at this family-run business, and back in the day, it was really successful. And then in 2 days, he turns it around. You know, up until he came up, they're fighting, they're losing money, it's not working. You know the story. It's the same sort of thing, right? And after 2 days, he turns it around. And there's some element in what we do, because everything is about simplifying. Bring it down to the basics. Bring the menu down. We actually say that in our job. And it's very much around Ramsay, because he's like, you're doing too many things. And all of those things are not working. So if you just bring it down, all right, and just do a few things really well, it will work.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because the show's Kitchen Nightmares, and there was I used to work at Fox, and at Fox I was on the staff for the content for the American version. But I remember a British version where he had a simple suggestion. It was like, hey, let's use fresh shrimp instead of frozen, and let's change the name of the restaurant. They were like, you're hurting our soul. Like, they were so heartbroken. But they did it, and it worked. It was like, you know what I mean? Sometimes you need an outside perspective, because you get married to things and go, that's the way it's always been done. So,
yeah. How long did you work on that for?
I was at Fox in two stints between 2010 and 12. So my first primary thing was on American Idol, 12 and 13, and then X Factor USA, 2 and 3. But in between, because those are seasonal shows, because they come in for three weeks, I was on content team. And by content teams, I'm getting the weeds here. So like, it's something called connected devices. So let's say you watch a Fox show on Hulu, and there's like a name of a clip and the description of the clip. Like, I wrote the descriptions and I clipped out the actual things for Kitchen Nightmares, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I like Kitchen Nightmares. I think it's a great transformation show.
Yeah. I don't want to drag any celebrity chefs, but I've been to a lot of celebrity chef restaurants because I'm totally a tourist like that. And I've gone, there's some brands I go buy. Oh, that guy? No, thanks. But I've never gone to, except for the ones I almost died in, right? I've never gone to a Gordon Ramsay place and felt disappointed. I said, that takes a lot to have a certain base level of quality, even though it can change. But to understand that there's a name that you can count on and trust is worth its weight in gold. And to add on to the whole Brit parallel, when Virgin America was a airline here, that was the only airline that treated me like I was somebody, even though I had no money. And when it left, I was like, oh my gosh, Richard Branson, what are you doing? Like, this is great.
Yeah. It really changed.
Yeah, it really changed. Sorry, I made this about me. Anyway, I'm so glad you're on the show. I'm so glad you're here and lets me ramble about airlines and Gordon Ramsay and junk food. This is so much fun. I love your perspective on things. But if someone wanted to learn more about you or to book you or to get that graphic novel, how'd it go about doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely go for the graphic novel, and you can get me on a link tree. So you like the link.tree/HuttonHenry. And the novel's in, there's a load of material, but there's quite a few free things in there, and the graphic novel's there for that.
Man, link trees are like the best invention ever. Like right up there with sliced bread. Not quite.
So good. Yeah, they are. Yeah. Probably a little bit healthier than bread as well.
Right. Absolutely. Where are you coming out of stateside? Do you have any business out here soon?
That's a good question. We don't come out that often. I mean, if I do, I came to Canada a couple of weeks ago. So it just happened randomly. But this is the sad thing about working remotely and from home, even that far away, whatever, you can do it over video. But I do believe that, you know, when you see each other in person, you get so much more from it.
Oh, absolutely.
But if I'm in your area, I would definitely knock you out there, you know, see what's, if you're around. So,
oh, absolutely. I'm not going anywhere. I can't afford to go anywhere. You see how bad the economy is? I mean, I'm here in Los Angeles, man. Here, give me your shout. Will you come through? And if I make it out there to see my cousin again in London, I'll definitely do the same.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, thanks so much.
It's a great city.
Absolutely. It's a great city. There's some parts in there that aren't so great, but like that's what makes it its own character. Much like London. That's what makes London its own character, you know. But yes, thanks so much for being on the show, man. New Amsterdam Radio Podcast for Creatives. We'll have you on later down the line because I want to see what's next on your creative chapters and endeavors.
Sounds great. Thank you. That's great. Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening to New Amsterdam Radio. Learn more about the show at newamsterdam.com. That's knewamsterdam.com. Until next time, this city is yours.